All right, everybody, it's Second John. It took 1 week to try to set the background for both of these two little letters and to try to think of what it might have been like for Christians in that situation. And then we made ourselves aware of the beginning of this letter, and then we focused last week on the relationship between the phrase the truth, in the truth, which is what we find four or five times in the first four verses, and love. And then today we focus again at verse four, and we notice love paired with another word, which is receiving and emphasize. And one of the things I want to remind us about here is these two little letters are an illustration of the fact that Christianity is a exercise in realism. It is not simply a system of feeling in which each person designs his own reality. Christianity is holding before us high ideals. The things we seek for and long for and seek. And yet it does so knowing that we deal with reality in a world that is not what God wants it to be yet. One of the ways in which that's true comes when we deal with the matter of fellowship. And in a perfect world, we would all be people. We would all be following God's will. We would all be characterized by completely noble motives, and we would all be holding to the truth God has laid known, and we would be loving each other. In the real world, there is a threat that I would like everybody to notice by contrasting two statements here in this part of the letter of Second John. One comes from verse 4, and one comes from verse 7. Everybody notice here, I rejoice greatly to find some of your children, look at this, some of your children, I'll let you have that understood, doing what? Walking in the truth. In other words, the walking means that they are living and keeping with it and conforming their lives to the truth and that kind of thing. So that part of it, everybody knows. Now, on the other hand, look at the beginning of verse 7. What does it say? All right, here, many deceivers are gone out into the world. Now, I suggest that point of stress is the reality that we're facing here in 2 John. Now, the question is a couple of things here. What does this suggest to you? Some versus many. I think that John the Elder is here concerned with whether those who are walking in the truth may be outnumbered or in that way. Then secondly, there is the reality which the idea of truth involves versus the deceiver, which is untruth, which is unreality, which is leaving the wrong impression or producing a false circumstance in people's minds and thoughts. And then, this says some of your children, this says some are gone out. Now, I'm wondering if what does the are gone out suggest to you, when it's contrasted with some of your children. I agree. It makes it sound like that the ones who are gone out from the church. Okay, now that's something that we'll think more about as we look down through this passage. But at least you see the issue now. How do we practice Christian fellowship in this type of situation? What happens to fellowship in this type of situation? How do we conduct ourselves toward each other? Do we embrace no matter what? Do we grow suspicious so that we are afraid of each other? I mean, it's ready to go. So let's start. Look at verses 4 through 6. It's all right, Lee.
There is not only the reason to be still careful, because the same scenario that happened in the fall, still today, is still the same scenario. Here and here. And it is evident.
And like the deceiver originally, sometimes it's subtle. Sometimes there's a subtlety involved in this. Now, look at verses 4 through 6, and this is totally, the main message of this book is verses 4 through 11. There are like 2 main different parts of it, and the first part is verses 4 through 6. Let's start with this. Aaron, do you mind the read for us back there? I'll talk to you if you guys have got Paul written it, you can do that for us. Okay.
I will say to the intended that in our community, this is a community that is quiet. And I ask you there, ladies, and not to say I know about any of this community, but to let it not have the intended that is God's community. And this is why that we want to pray for this community. This is a community that just to be a part of the community, so we don't need to walk in it.
All right, now, last week I called your attention, or we tried to notice together, John's habit of making a point by repeating a word or a phrase, and in the first few verses it was truth, and then truth related to love to special. In this section, what word or term did John repeat to make his point? All right, Brendan said, commandments. I think that's right. How many times in these 4, 5, 6, these 3 verses does he use that term? 4 times in 3 verses, right? Commandments. Now, on the other hand, you notice he still also focuses on the word love. He mentions it. What, 1, 2 times especially, and makes reference for it if one happens in another way. So we have a repeated emphasis on the commandment, a commandment of the Lord, and then on love, the commandment of the Lord, and then love for one another. Now, if there are deceivers who mislead people with regard to the Lord's commandments, what effect is John afraid, or does John realize that's going to have on their relationship to each other? All right. It's the opposite of how sometimes people think. Now, people think that we should lessen and attention on what the Lord commands, because that will help us love and accept each other more. What John takes is the opposite approach. The way for us to avoid suspicion and division and to love each other more is for there to be a law of the Lord, what the Lord has commanded. In John's writing, it's really interesting that both belief and love are thought of not simply as intuition and emotion, but as obedient responses to what God has said. Now, I want to illustrate what I'm getting at from other parts of John's writing. Look at John 3 in verse 36, for example, with regard to belief. This would be what we would think of about belief of the truth, which we're talking about here in verse 4, walking in the truth. John 3, verse 36. And I want to mention to you that the King James Version is based on a text which translates one word here different from any other of the versions that I can find. John 3, 36. Mike, do you have that text? All right, now in that verse, what is the opposite of believing in God, of believing in Christ? Not obeying, right? So, does everybody see what I'm getting at? Belief is not, the opposite of belief is not, in John's usage, is not simply unbelief. It's also disobedience. Well, I'd like everybody to kind of bear that part in mind. Now look at also in John's writing the way he thinks of love for one another. And I'll use a passage maybe we're often familiar with. He's ready for summer. Look at John 15, for example. Verses 12, 13, and 14. John 15, 12, 13, 14. And this is typical. Three times in John 14 it comes up. John 13, verses 33, 34, along in there, it has the commandment and the love for one another. But look at this, verse John 15, 12, 13, and 14. Now, John, did you read that for us?
This is my commandment, that you love one another as I have loved you. Greater love has no one than this, that someone lays down his life for his friends. You are my friends if you do what I command.
All right, now in verses 13 and 14, and verse 12 is the commandment, I will know that I love you. Verses 13 and 14, if you think about it, loving like this involves self-giving in the form of obeying the Lord.
Doing what we have
to think about it. Look at that passage. Loving involves self-giving that takes the form of obedience to the Lord. So the suggestion that love and obedience, or belief and obedience, are exclusively each other is a false choice. In the way we handle what the Lord has asked of us. Now, so here we are, and look down through verse 4 now, back in 2 John. Walking in the truth meant what, verse 4? Alright, it meant acting as we were commanded by the Father, right? So that's walking in truth. Now, verse 5, I ask you, dear lady, who did we suggest the dear lady is in this passage? I take this approach. This is a congregation of the Lord's people who are troubled by the problem that John is addressing here. Then he says, it's not as though I were writing a new command. Now, back in 1 John chapter 2, John dealt with it as if it were the new commandment. Here, he's simply going to say this is a commandment we've heard from the beginning, if you notice verse 2. And the new commandment that we have from the beginning is that we love one another. Now, in reading this, verse 4, walking in the truth, and verse 5, that we love one another, seem to be thought of as the same thing to you, right? And this accords with what the rest of the New Testament teaches. And I suggest to you, without taking the time to reread all these passages, Romans 13, verses 8 and following, teaches this same thing. 1 Peter 1:22 teaches this same thing. Obey the gospel and say, purify your souls for love for one another. And then 1 John 5, really chapters 4 and 5, also teaches the same thing. So this is a consistent, whether it's Paul or Peter or John, this is a consistent thought in the New Testament. And it's because it's what Jesus taught in John 13:34-35. As a prominent example of that. So, this is not right. We have a new commandment. Let me ask you this now. Why do you suppose John would phrase it this way? Not as if I'm writing you a new commandment, but the one we had from the beginning. Is it possible that one approach of the deceivers that he's concerned about is that they have come along to get that they have a new commandment in faith? I believe we're going to read in a few verses to you that that's probably exactly the approach that they say. I read that's two different things. For us to progress in our understanding of what Jesus has already said, it's one thing. For us to go on from that, to think that we've learned more than what Jesus said, is a different matter. And the fellow I thought of, I'm amazed he's only took me 2 or 3 minutes to think of it, is Vance Havner said, I read this one time, you want to be careful of those who've heard from God since you have. There's some wisdom in there. One successful of those who first in God can do that. And the approach John is taking here is this is what he has from the beginning. What the Lord has always said, and he said, and we should say it, if I believe.
Does he sit there on the truth? He wants to be out here today. And one other thing is, for example, if you remember many years, without a conversation with you in your office, and you advise God, and instead of thinking somebody, instead of thinking a video, you change it. Many times, as a member of the church, we look at somebody that done something that offended you or whatever. And the deceiver really did us telling us exactly what that person did. And again, the new commandment is that you have to change through because you have to do it.
We have to listen to what the Lord has told us before we're going to do the figure thing to help someone else listen to what the Lord said.
So you think you have to recognize anything to do that?
Yes, what we think we need to be. He's really good at that. That's a good point. Now, everybody look back to the passage here. John will specify what he's talking about a little later. I want you to be aware of that. So for now he says, commandment is that we love one another. So keeping God's commandment explains to us what it will mean to love each other. If that makes it hard.
What I'm saying is what Paul is saying in Romans 13. If we do what God says, that will be loving. Speaking of what he teaches us, the idea. Now, verse 6, this is love, that we walk according to his commandments. Very important point. In the New Testament, it's not just simply that it's the love and then for me to do whatever to you that I meant to be loving. It is for me to act as God has taught me toward you. It'd be probably helpful for us to read two passages to illustrate what I'm getting at. I've mentioned Romans 13. Please look back over to Romans 13 and notice verse 8 to start with. We'll read from Romans and then from 1 Corinthians. And we could read from 1 Peter 2 if we went into it. We didn't go that far with it. But, two different ways you could do this. There is a paragraph in Romans 12, beginning at verse 9, that might be helpful to start with. Why don't you read it for Romans 12, 9, 9 through 14, 9 through 16.
Let God be without hypocrisy. And more of what is evil, sin is what is good. It's kindly affectionate to one another with brotherly love, and honor giving preference to one another, not minding humility, brotherly spirit, serving the Lord. Rejoicing in hope, patient in tribulation, continuing steadfastly in prayer, contributing to the needs of the saints, giving the heart to prayer. Bless those who persecute you, bless and be my Christ. Rejoice with those who rejoice. Be of the same mind toward one another. Do not set your mind on high things, but associate with the humble. Do not be wise in
everything. Now, what I will mention to us is that a lot of the commentators I noticed say that verse 9, where it says that let love be genuine, is the statement that is explained by all the rest of what one is just read. In other words, let love be genuine is not a one instruction followed by several others. It is the point explained by all the other statements. And what you notice in that is that genuine love takes certain kinds of action. Everybody see that? Now look over chapter 13, start at verse 8. Even read that for 8 through 10. Alright, now. The idea that if you fulfill the law, I'm going to reword this in different order. If you fulfill the law, you will be loving. You got it, all right. So explain to you, verses 9 to 10.
For you cannot be an adulterer,
So, in order to know how to love, I would need to some understanding of God's law. And it would tell me not to commit adultery, not murder, not steal, and so forth, and to love my neighbor as myself, do no wrong to him. That would be love. All right? So that is the kind of thing I believe that John has in mind in 2 John. Now, in verse 6 then, when someone comes along and he has a commandment that we haven't heard yet, and the effect of that commandment is to disturb the love among God's people or to destroy it, what thought should come to the congregation of the Lord's people? Maybe this is not according to the truth. Maybe this is not. So, I want to call our attention to a couple of ways in which the New Testament speaks about this thought here. What we've heard from the beginning, the truth we've heard from the beginning, the commandment that we should walk in is that we should love each other like Jesus did. Now, what about someone comes along and he has a wisdom that doesn't lead to this? Look at James chapter 3.
James chapter 3 and look at verses 13 through 15. James chapter 3. He has that time.
Be among you is what I do in the standard. They can show by his good behavior his grief and his willingness of wisdom. But if you have bitter jealousy and selfish envy in your heart, you must beware of that you show life against the truth. This wisdom is not that which comes from above, but is earthly, natural, demonic.
All right, now that's kind of a sobering passage, isn't it? If the fruit of the so-called wisdom is bitter jealousy and selfish ambition, it's not wisdom from above, right? Look back over to the Sermon on the Mount in John in Matthew chapter 7 for a second. Matthew chapter 7. In verse 15 through 20, is to be clear. Matthew 7, 15 through 20. And when you listen to this, in view of a situation like what John is talking about in 2 John, then you have context, I think, for what the Lord is saying in this passage here. Who gives the reading from Paul? All right, you comment there. That would be a deceiver, wouldn't it? Sheep clothing, but actually a wolf. All right, Barney.
You will know them by the fruit. You mean gather grapes and bear bushes and figs from bushes? Even so, every good tree bears a good fruit, but a bad tree bears a bad fruit. This tree cannot bear bad fruit, nor can a bad tree bear a good fruit. Every tree that does not bear a good fruit is cut down and is thrown into the fire. Therefore, by their fruit, you will know them.
All right. There are different ways that a lot of us have never been around fruit trees. When I was a little kid, my dad did the year-round management of a big orchard in Michigan. It involved all of the removing of trees or replanting of trees and so forth. And oftentimes, I just mentioned to you, there's a difference between a tomato plant and a ragweed. And you can tell it how. By what kind of tree. And as I understand it, it is a fruit, isn't it? Tomato? I've heard that. So, how do you know? The fruit. So, if someone comes along and he's really entrenched in oratory, and he's really entrenched in personality, he's a sophisticated, he he or her really seems to be up on the latest. But what he teaches is not what the Lord commanded, and it produces strife instead of love among the Lord's people, then that should be wondered. And it should be that the fellowship, this is the part that I'm going to talk about here, that the fellowship not be destroyed in the name of fellowship. Yeah. You see what I'm getting at? Okay. That's John's concern in this area, that the fellowship not be destroyed in the name of fellowship. That is, by accepting and supporting that which is destructive in its empirical effect. All right. I believe, though, this background is important to our handling of the two warnings that follow from this letter. I'm sorry I didn't leave more time. Make a note of what you wanted to mention in your talk.
Well, the
we said balance is needed, and what Marty just mentioned is really important. But what we're going to see, that what John has in mind is not a difference in opinion about whether we should start our worship at 9:30 or 10, or whether the carpet should be this color or bright orange. The difference is, did the Son of God come in the flesh? In other words, what our faith is all about.
So, of all things, you know, if you go to heaven, you need to pay attention to the people that come and try to divide. And so the question is, my conscience, my conscience is true, actually talking my brothers and sisters, am I defeating myself, trying to do something that it is not even related to the law and supposed to happen in my brother?
First John, if you guys need to go get through, go ahead. First John, in chapter 1, John was concerned about whether we would deceive him, what a person could deceive himself. In the Old Testament, in one of the Proverbs, or in Jeremiah, the heart is deceitful above all things, who can know it? And then the teaching that God knows the heart. That's the important thing. So God is going to command us what our hearts need in that way. So that's important. All right, we'll try to balance this next week the way John does and what Marnie mentioned there. See you guys next Lord's Day. Lord willing.